Hey, y'all, this is Day and Ari with Winchell Time. Thanks for tuning in. Today is October 21st, Monday. Happy Monday.
Woo, lovely rainy Monday.
Yeah, very, very rainy Monday here in Seattle. Hey, Ari, what's Winchell Time?
Funny you ask, Day. I always get a giggle there. Welcome to Windshield Time, y'all. Thanks for tuning in. This podcast is a non-technical, fun, informative way to learn about Bitcoin, blockchains, and digital assets for parents and busy working folks who are curious about these technologies. Day and myself and our guests talk about these evolutionary systems of money and what they touch in all of our lives. Because what part of your life does money not touch?
Thank you, Ari. And so my name is Day. Oh, keep going. Sorry.
Just so that everyone's clear, this podcast is not financial advice, and your reactions are your total and complete absolute responsibility, y'all. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Day, who are you?
So I am a former sales engineer and network engineer working on very high-speed networks for large companies, and now I am an independent investor along with Ari in this space, and then also I am a big cheerleader of this whole Bitcoin, blockchains, and digital assets area. What about you, Ari?
Chair of the Cascadia Blockchain Council, powered by the WTIA, which is the Washington Technology Industry Association. It's also the largest technology industry association in the United States, powering over 1,100 technology companies. Yep.
Awesome. Awesome.
So how are you, Day?
I'm doing all right. Looking forward to a short session of post-production and editing for this episode that's going to go out tomorrow, Tuesday, October 22nd.
Getting better and better at our processes.
Yep,
here.
Exactly.
Scaling.
How are you?
I'm good. Despite the rain, I feel like we have a lot of opportunities and a lot of things ahead of us. We just have to remember to communicate. You know how sometimes we think we communicate something through our, imaginary teleportation. What is that thing called?
It's called telepathy.
Telepathy?
Yeah. My antenna is always on. I don't know about yours. My transmission and receiving works perfectly.
You know, sometimes the telepathy antenna just doesn't work. And I think other humans have this weird experience too. Like you think somebody just magically understands what you're thinking and feeling. And I don't know, somehow the telepathy antenna just breaks down. So
yep.
We'll get better.
Yep. We'll definitely get better. Let's go into some Satoshi Mass. So I checked my Apple quotes a little while ago. If you wanted to bring up Bitcoin on your Apple quotes because you're already checking that for your stocks every day, then what you want to look for is BTC-USD. That's the way it looks in the Apple Stocks app. So you take the price of Bitcoin. It gave me a little while ago. Right now it's about 5 o'clock on Monday. It was $8,230.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, you take one dirty fiat dollar and then you divide that by a decimalized version of 8230. So then it's going to be 0.00008230. And then you're going to get 12,150 sats per U.S. dirty dollar fiat.
You're not biased at all about fiat dollars.
I show no bias in that. That is just an observation of the fact that apparently cocaine can be found on the majority all the $100 bills or $20 bills or something like that in the United States. It is what it is. The U.S. dollar is the most widely used currency in the world for crime.
Womp womp.
All right, so let's get into the events here and cover that real quick. We're going to try to make this a record-breaking introduction before the Brianna Radar interview that we did. So what are the events?
Yeah, so I'm just going to focus on the next 7 days because there's a lot going on. Tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m. via Galvanize, Techstars Startup Week is hosting a panel called Innovating in a Regulatory Environment. And so we'll have several companies presenting. I'll be moderating. Yay. So we'll also have CoinMe, Dragon Chain, and Perkins Coie and Aqua Genuity on the panel talking about their experiences innovating in a regulatory environment. At 11 a.m., we'll have a webinar via the CoinMe team. And so they'll be talking about why Bitcoin is important. And then next week is Vegas Blockchain Week. So a whole host of events coming up.
And those are on Tuesday, the 22nd Pacific time. You're talking about, right?
Yep.
Okay.
8:30 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Pacific, respectively.
Okay. And then?
And then next week we have Blockchain Vegas Week, Vegas Blockchain Week. So that's, you know, Coin Agenda Global, Money 2020, Litecoin Summit, WCC. So a whole host of events happening next week. We'll be there for a large portion of it. I'll even be playing at the poker tournament.
Where Mike Tyson Mansion.
Yeah, Mike Tyson Mansion. And then we also have a Telegram group set up for those from the Seattle region that are headed down to Vegas so that we can kind of build a cohort and help each other as we navigate the giant conference week that it is.
And that's starting Saturday, October 22nd through the end of the month. So that's going to be a really, really, really busy time for us.
Yeah, yeah. And then one interesting thing that the CoinMe team is doing on November 1st, there's going to be a Spanish version of the Why Bitcoin is Important webinar. So for those that are in the Spanish community or know of people in the Spanish community, I think this is a real big opportunity because one of the things that we've noticed is a lot of the use cases does happen from the Spanish community. And I think that's really interesting and also something that we really want to be supportive of by creating in-language Spanish type of content and collateral to help that community.
Very cool. And then on November 5th, we got the WTIA Monthly Happy Hour. That's going to be at Optimism Brewery on Capitol Hills here in Seattle, Washington.
And it's sponsored. So, you know, come and enjoy complimentary drinks and food sponsored by the WTI Cascadia Blockchain Council. We're here to build that community, and we don't want to have any reasons why you can't join.
Awesome. So then before we run the disclosures by Dom at CoinMe, who's also a sponsor here, we're going to just give you a little bit of a preview of the show we are presenting here at the end.
Yeah.
So it's Brianna Radar. She was part of the Ready, Set, Raise.
Of the Female Founders Alliance. She is the CEO. And so this is going to be a first of the series that Day and I will be producing around the startups that just came out of the Ready, Set, Raise Accelerator. And I think you'll really, really enjoy the different stories of these female founders. And what you'll also realize that we found on the journey is that, you know, male, female, black, white, green, orange, black, blue, you know, large, small, talent is equally distributed. But what we have to do as a community is give access to those opportunities that help them grow their companies, fund their companies, and get the talent via advisors, employees, and investors so that they can actually really grow their businesses.
Exactly. So this is a really exciting episode. For the parents out there listening in the cars with kids, this is probably more of a PG-13 just because of the topic itself. Thank you for listening. If you need to cut it off right now, don't feel comfortable with going in there. There's no profanity, but it's just that some of the topics, or the main topic, is more adult-oriented. And so you may be more comfortable in listening to it in private or something. But it was a really, really, really fun interview we did with Brianna. I included a little bit of a preview at the extreme end of the last episode that we published this past Friday, the preview to the Ready, Set, Raise. What other comments do you have?
Brianna Radar is the CEO of a company called Juicebox. Twitter handle is JuiceboxIt.
Yep. Three words altogether, JuiceboxIt. Yep. Very, very easy to remember.
And it's basically a sex education bot that you can use to help in communications with your partner or partners, however you see it. It's actually very, very interesting. She's been growing 5% week over week, all organic. And in terms of a startup business, this was just fascinating to hear what the problem was that she was solving, her journey to get there, and all the interesting facts that she learned along the way.
Yeah, so if you go on the website for Juicebox, and again, that's JuiceboxIt.com, three words all put together, no spaces, dashes, periods, or anything like that. She's gotten a really good amount of press. She was on the Bill O'Reilly show.
Yeah,
which is
at
really
the age of 21, too.
Yes, exactly. And so she's been featured, and the company's been featured in Men's Health, Fast Company, San Francisco Chronicle, Forbes, and Inc. So really, really good exposure she's had already. And she is, you know, on the fundraising trail and going to be growing her business massively.
Yeah. Thank you to our sponsors, CoinMe, the WTIA, and also FreshChalk.com, FreshChalk.com, your best destination for recommendations from your friends. And then CoinMe, one of the best on-ramps to the world of digital assets and Bitcoin. They have ATMs, they have a private client services, and a whole host of different products and services you should definitely check out. And the WTIA, Washington Technology Industry Association. For those in the tech industry, we create one collective voice, partnerships with government, policy, investors, innovators, and also create ways that we can bargain and save money and cost in terms of recruiting, 401k, etc.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and roll Dom. Thanks, Dom, at CoinMe for reading the disclosures, disclaimers again, and then we go straight into the interview. It's not of the amazing sonic quality that I like to have for the interviews because we had to use our little tiny voice recorder, but it's still a pretty good audio quality recording. So enjoy, and then let us know any feedback you got at Luggage Donkey and at Arian Seattle. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Hi, y'all. This is Dom from CoinMe, or you might know me from The Blockchain Minute, your daily show for the most important story on the blockchain. None of the statements or opinions expressed in this podcast by the guests or its host is to be taken as financial advice or a solicitation of any kind to participate in a conservative or risky or speculative financial instrument that may or may not require accredited investor status as defined by either the Securities and Exchange Commission of the United States of America or independent thought and rational thinking from the laws of humanity. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge that the hosts, Ari and Day, and their guests are not financial advisors of any kind, but only humans and not sentient intergalactic alien life forms. All statements made in this podcast by any living or dead or unborn or zombie or robotic entity in the past, present, or future of the space-time continuum of this known universe are purely ironic or coincidental thoughts and opinions. Moments of sarcasm, sadness, education, glee, entertainment, or any other emotion that may be found in this podcast are fully your responsibility and reaction that may or may not be intended for the listener in any way, shape, or form. Mature adult discretion is strongly advised. Thank you for listening.
So we're sitting here with Brianna Radar. I've been really lucky to be a part of the Female Founders Alliance and the Ready, Set, Raise Accelerator here for the past several weeks. And I've been able to be a part of the journey with several of the startups here. And Brianna Radar was one of my favorites. She's the founder and CEO of Juicebox, and thought that our listeners and everybody had to just hear her story because it is absolutely incredible. Brianna, say hi.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks so much for having me today. Yeah, I'm the CEO and founder of Juicebox. We're a sexual wellness company trying to transform people's experience with erotic media and sex education through an interactive, fun, sexy chatbot.
Where are you from? And then what in your past kind of led to start Juicebox?
Yeah, I grew up in Tennessee, so very conservative background, actually had no access to sex education. It's still illegal to teach comprehensive sex ed in the public school system there. So actually I started a nonprofit in Tennessee to provide sex ed to college students to, you know, break this cycle. And it was really controversial. Actually, the state got involved. They tried to shut us down. They legally condemned the organization and me as an individual. But it led to like this huge media craze. I ended up on the Bill O'Reilly show. So I had to get comfortable talking about sex like really quickly after that. And that led me to creating Juicebox because unfortunately I feel like most people don't have the role models that I got when I started my nonprofit. And so most people learn about sex and intimacy from pornography. And it's completely unrealistic, puts pressure on men to perform, doesn't talk about women's pleasure, and doesn't teach us how to communicate. So, you know, what if there actually was erotic media that was still healthy and still entertaining?
So sex is generally still to this day, 2019, very taboo. I know, I grew up in the States, so made in the USA, and we had sex ed starting at like, I think it was like, what, sixth grade or seventh grade. What is sex ed today, and what do you think it should have been when you didn't have it in Tennessee?
Yeah, you know, I believe that we should really get over this idea that sex is like bad to talk about to kids. I think we really just need to be really honest with young adults that the reason people have sex is for fun and for pleasure. Like, why are we lying about that? You know, like we just need to stop the bull and just talk about that. So I wish that we would start it actually at a very young age, like in kindergarten. Oh. But at different ages, you teach different things. So in kindergarten, you're just teaching things like when someone says to stop tickling you, that means you need to stop. And teaching these ideas of consent early on, not in a sexual context. Mm-hmm. And then the conversation moves into more like puberty when you're in fourth and fifth grade. And then in middle school, I think that's when you really need to start talking about these pleasure elements and these sex elements.
So I gotta tell you, I have a certain personal policy regarding, you know, teaching sensitive subjects to our boys. Mm-hmm. And Ari doesn't necessarily agree, but be like profanity. Mm-hmm. I would much rather be the teacher and the guide with respect to consuming and producing profanity for my boys, because here's my thing before you come
yes,
in.
Dear.
I totally respect
I love you.
Your opinion, but my thing is, you know, just like your topic of sex and healthy reproductive, you know, mindset and actions, is I would rather try to be the teacher than leave it up to anyone else in the world willy-nilly who may care, probably doesn't care about profanity in my kid's life. And if we can get ahead of it too, that means we'll be ahead of it when it comes to other kids influencing our boys. So instead of them just picking it up on the school bus, which is where I picked it up, on a public school bus, I'd rather be the trusted authority on being able to provide that information to them. And so when they hear F-bombs and everything else, then they'll know, oh, I was told about that. Oh, that's probably not a great way to be projecting yourself, you know, and stuff like that. And so, you know, you and I will be parenting in ways that, you know, will be organically figured out.
So I guess talking about profanity is very similar, adjacent topic to talking about sex. So me, I grew up in upstate New York, very, very, very conservative area. I also grew up Seventh-day Adventist. So super, super traditional, not allowed to do anything. I was barely even allowed to like listen to the radio because that was forbidden. And to relate it back to what Dave was saying, and extrapolating to me as a parent today, bad words are bad words, and sex is definitely taboo and bad to talk about. And then you extrapolate through my educational system, sex was definitely taboo. If you said a bad word, you were definitely like gonna get really in trouble. And I learned the F word while in third grade around a lunch table.
So you were 8 years old?
I was 8 years old when I had first heard it. So I remember I was raised by wolves and one room skull house type of deal. And someone said the F word, and I was like, oh, what's that? And someone said, oh, it means to hit a bird with two stones. And I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. Why is that considered a bad word? Huh, interesting. Okay, so now that was the definition of the F word. Hit a bird with two stones or something like that. And then extrapolate to college. So now I'm at, you know, in the college dorm room, we're sitting around in the room and we're watching TV. And this is also my first exposure to MTV. Yeah. Now at the bright age of 18, Dave's like, what? Who did I marry?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then someone said the F word. And I was like, why? Can someone just please explain to me why this is such a bad word and why people get all wrapped around like using it so much? Because everyone looks at me and they're like, Ari, do you not know what it means? I'm like, no. Well, kind of. I mean, it means to hit a bird with two stones. And everyone literally, like the entire dorm room went silent. And they all looked at me and were like, are you serious? Are you serious? Yeah.
That's amazing.
So I don't want that experience for our two children.
There's other ways to describe it. There's other ways, like clinical ways, like non-malevolent, like benevolent ways to like teach it and be in the vicinity of what the true word is.
How would you treat a young person? What the meaning of the F word is?
Yeah, I don't have kids, first of all. But if I did, or in the future, I feel like I would lean towards not sheltering my children, but over-explaining everything.
Over-explaining.
Yes. So actually, even though I grew up in this conservative environment, my grandmother let me watch whatever I wanted to watch, like R-rated movies,
really?
Like when I was in elementary school. Not violent things, but if, you know, unfortunately, a lot of amazing movies get R-rated just because they say the F word three times,
which
seems very silly to me. Yeah. Like, it seems like our moralities are out of line. Like, to me, a very violent movie should actually be more R-rated than something that's just a little sexual or a little profane. But that's my opinion. So, anyway, that's probably what I would do. I would just, like, try to over-explain everything. My kids would probably get tired of my my explanations, but yeah.
Let's go into one idea topic that you brought up in the pitch today about sexual well-being, the topic of sex, the idea of sex, sex being in the foundations of the Maslow's hierarchy.
Yeah.
That's the first time I ever heard anybody call that out. Yeah. I've always heard of, you know, shelter, food, safety, but I've never heard anyone else put it there.
Yeah.
So could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, so if you're unfamiliar with this, the hierarchy of needs is about, you know, the base is the things you need to literally survive, and then at the very top is more like self-actualization type things.
Yep.
So intimacy and in the context of like a loving relationship, a marriage, mm-hmm. is higher up on the pyramid, but like sex, the physical biological version, is on the bottom. So they actually have it in two places on the pyramid, which I love too. Ooh. So it's important Ooh. In two places. But yeah, the human race would literally not exist without sex. So that's why it's on the base of the pyramid. We need it for survival. So it's just crazy to me that this is something that's so inherent to our human experience. Yet no one, like if you walked down the street and you said, hey, name a mattress brand. Hey, name a delivery brand. There would be these very well-known brands yeah. everyone would be able to name. And then what about sexual wellness? Everyone would be like, like what would they say? Maybe Planned Parenthood?
Oh, yeah. No.
Maybe Playboy? Or yeah. something, which would be unfortunate probably. But, you know, I just feel like we should have these positive, recognizable brands for such a core part of our lives.
We don't. Well, what are the products that are core, since you're the expert, that we should know about?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of emerging companies in this space. It's a pretty new market, mm-hmm. right? So there are some other companies like me that are just now emerging. Like Lioness is a company that I love that's based out of the Bay Area, but they're in more like the erotic toys industry, mm-hmm. like physical products. And there's no one really, what I'm trying to describe doing is more the content and helping people with these questions. And so that's what we're trying to do, is fill that space.
So the name was on the sheet, it said Juicebox It. It wasn't Juicebox mm-hmm. IT. Right. Okay.
So yeah, Juicebox It is just our corporation name, but consumers know us by Juicebox.
Okay. Just Juicebox. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Cool. Oh, I had asked the question about how you got the name, mm-hmm. so let's start there and then go into actual the service itself.
Yeah. So we actually started with one-on-one sex coaching and counseling, all online, from a network of sex educators and therapists. And when we launched that product in 2018, we used a lot of fruit motifs in our branding. And so a few of our customers said, oh, you should call it Juicebox, because it's innocent. No one's going to second guess an app on your phone called Juicebox. But also, you can kind of read between the lines and see the innuendos there, too. So that's where the name comes from. And then this year, we launched a new product. It is a bot that you sign up on our website, enter your phone number, and the bot replies. Mm-hmm. And then the bot guides you through erotic conversation. Mm-hmm. Many of our users actually have described it as an interactive romance novel. Mm-hmm. And then the bot also sends you a weekly tip mm-hmm. that's meant to inspire and educate. And I've talked to couples that use it together, and it helps keep their sex lives top of mind.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask today, if two people are on the journey with the bot, and they each give independently the same exact text, will the journey be exactly the same for the both of them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as the product that's public right now is definitely a little bit more of a chat bot than AI. So by that, I mean that there is a finite number of responses. So if you use the bot over and over and over again, eventually you'll get repeat content. And so the next version we want to launch, we want to expand that so that you don't start to get repeat content. But the back end, you can imagine, is just a very complex decision tree, mm-hmm. and you can explore down different paths. Mm-hmm. And then the bot is pretty smart. Like, it understands things like yes, no, many different ways to say no, sexist language, violent language, racist language. It responds to all that. So we didn't want someone to text the bot something very messed up and the bot to be like, ooh, sexy, you know, that would not be good. But also, it understands things like, do you want to be tied up or do you want to tie the bot up? Like things like that, so you can choose which one you want. Mm-hmm. And the next version, we want it to be even a little bit smarter.
So it's sort of like choose your own adventure book. Like when I was a kid, you like, yep. Oh, do you want to go left or do you want to go right? I want to go right. So similar idea.
Yeah, exactly. It's a segment of interactive fiction, basically. Yeah.
Awesome. Actually, I told you I signed up. And so I went to the website, I entered my phone number, I got a text right away, which was really very, you know, getting that immediate gratification was really great. And then it just started asking me, like, you know, are you male or female? How do you identify? And like, what do you like? I also noticed that it never asked me for like my name, it never asked me for specifics of who I am. So I never felt like if something happened and someone were to find out this was happening, no one would be able to figure out it was me, so I felt kind of safe about it, which was really great. Yeah, you should try a day.
Well, I mean, it is the age of information and disinformation and publicly available private information, and so if your phone number's in there,
yeah,
and they have an unfortunate, you know, data, you know, breach of some kind, then theoretically that entire history could be made available in the world.
The same goes for any SMS company, yeah, or person out there. So if, yeah, someone really wanted to hack, hopefully the sexy message you to send to each other, they could get that too.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I tend to lean towards the, you know, being paranoid and, mm-hmm, cautious with respect to, you know, data and privacy, like, especially after having worked in the businesses I was in for, you know, for, mm-hmm, a while. So is it currently available to the public? I think you said it is.
Okay. Yeah, all we're right, live cool. via SMS. Actually, we're also on Messenger. We're going to expand that.
Facebook Messenger?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're going to expand that too, because we're going to start doing more tests and run those tests probably on the Messenger channel. But yeah, okay, sign up on our website, juiceboxit.com, or you can just, you know, Google Juicebox Sex Bot. Something will come up. We are in the New York Times and stuff, so we have some great press articles too if you want to read about us there.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I'll have to include in the show notes some of the more... you know, I guess popular external write-ups and videos that have been done. On the fruit topic, did you see that Katy Perry, and there was one, I would believe, like MTV award show where it was fruit everywhere. Did you see that by chance?
That.
Oh,
no,
man. I'll have to find that and send it to you.
So, like, during your pitch, you said you're growing at an alarming rate, 5% week over week, which is sort of like Y Combinator, world of stats. If you're into, like, startups and entrepreneurship, it's, like, it's jaw-dropping. All organic, too, all word of mouth, which is, again, jaw-dropping, jaw on the floor. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about, like, generalized data? What have you learned about why this is so interesting to people? Like, why does this work? Or some interesting facts about what people are doing with the bot?
Yeah, you know, it's been amazing. We definitely didn't anticipate this response. We launched with a ton of PR, so that kicked us off well. But since then, friends have just been sharing it with each other. Luckily, it's very easy to get started since it's on SMS. 60% of our users share it with friends. People feel comfortable using it together. I think what we learned here is that sex can be a really scary topic. So our first product that was more sex coaching, sex therapy felt kind of heavy, right? To admit that you have a problem and you want to hire a sex coach and pay for that, it's not very approachable. But if you flip that on its head and make it light and fun, sexy, engaging, suddenly you get rid of that whole barrier. And I think that's why we're growing so much more rapidly than we did with our old product. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's so important to first keep things fun and the education is baked into it. Because adults, I mean, sex sells, but you have to do it the right way. And no one wants to do like a chalkboard sex ed 101 as an adult, right? You want it to be fun. Yeah.
And so you were saying how you're not going to be barred from being in the two app stores?
That's correct. There are other erotic media companies in the app store right now.
Okay. Yeah. Because that's, you know, a little bit of controversy way back when Steve Jobs said, we're not having adult content on here.
So visuals. So there are no apps allowed in the Play Store or App Store that even do textbook, like, genitalia-type diagrams.
Really?
Stay away from any visuals that are sexual at all.
Okay.
Unfortunately, they've gone too far with it, because there was, like, a puberty sex ed app that was made for young girls, like, 10, 11, 12 years old, and it had extremely educational, like, medical diagrams in it, and the App Store would not approve it. Yeah.
So we're in a Puritan state of affairs still in 2019. I mean, I grew up it, but I didn't realize the rest of the world was like that. Okay, so like we're in a very Puritan state of affairs, and you have a prior experience as like a sex coach therapist type person, right?
Yeah, sex educator.
Sex educator.
Yeah.
Like, what sort of stuff did you know about the real physical world that are insights into how you look at this product and how it will help people?
Yeah, I think what we learned in our old product doing the sex therapy and my work in sex education is, yes, everyone has different issues. Like, someone might struggle with erectile issues, someone might struggle with female orgasm or libido, and there's all these different issues. But really, at most issues, the fundamental issue is that people can't communicate about these topics, and then there's nowhere to go to see a role model. Because most people learn about everything via role modeling, and unfortunately, pornography is that role model today. And so we kind of thought, okay, we can't really get into all these different tiny little issues, but if we can address the fundamental issue of normalizing this and communicating about it, then that would be the best way to help everyone. Yeah.
What is your response to maybe investors, critical investors who say, you know, this is nice, I like it, it's good, I like you, but we see this as more of like a one-time product, not as a company. What do you say to them?
Yeah, well, I would say first use the product, because I doubt you're going to use it once, only once. We have very engaged user base, comes back over and over again, and we supply that with our weekly tips every Thursday. But then I would also say go interview someone who reads romance novels. Go interview someone who reads erotica. Do they read it once? No. Romance novel consumers are some of the most voracious readers out there. I think around 5% of romance readers buy more than one book a week.
Wow.
It's an extremely lucrative market. Because people really, really enjoy their romance novels and their erotica.
But romance novels, that's like super old school. They've been around since like...
It's a long time. Yeah, it's the most lucrative genre of all fiction books. Like more than sci-fi, more than like everything.
What?
Yeah.
More than sci-fi?
Yes, more literally the most lucrative, yeah.
What do you mean by lucrative? Like $100 million or something?
No. Billions.
Billions?
Yeah, globally billions, yeah.
Like... Billions.
Yeah.
On romance novels.
Yeah, and actually what's more interesting, I think, is as we have Kindle, you don't have to go to the bookstore and maybe be a little embarrassed of buying this like cheesy book with the cover. So you can just go on Amazon and get your Kindle, your romance novel on your Kindle. And so actually now, like, I think around a third of romance novel sales are shifting online. And I'm curious to see if that will make it grow over time. But I do think we need new erotic media, like what we're creating for a younger generation, because some of the romance novel content, I feel like, doesn't really reach people under a certain age.
So you mentioned younger generation. That's also part of your pitch and presentation. Tell me about what is that new demographic. Is the Gen Z?
Yeah. Like, tell me about Gen Z. Yeah, we have two breakout user groups. So the first one are these young people you're talking about. These are people between the ages of 18 and 28. So these are very young millennials and then older Gen Z. So what's really interesting about this group is that they've already decided sex is like part of wellness. They're not in that category of thinking sex is devious or we shouldn't be able to talk about it. Actually, one little fun anecdote that I've been talking about recently is Calvin Klein did some market research and they actually found out that sex and gender issues were number one to this generation.
Number one.
Yeah, people thought it was gonna maybe be like climate change or something like that, but it wasn't. So yeah, this generation really views sex as part of their health. Mm-hmm. And then the second breakout user group, interestingly, is actually older men, Gen X. These are men that are in long-term relationships. And I think for this group, they're actually looking to solve a problem. They've been in a relationship a long time. There's a lack of novelty. They want to refresh in their relationship. And if you look at our two user groups, you really see our two value props.
Hey, Dave, you're Gen X. Sign up. Let's try it.
I am a very proud Gen Xer. I got to go to the pop culture, you know, kind of touching that you did with Bill O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. So he's no longer there, I'm pretty sure. So what was that whole entire experience like with him?
Yeah, it was really a whirlwind. What happened is the state publicly announced that they were going to be defunding my organization. And so the news just kind of like picked it up like crazy. And I don't even know how many interviews I did in one day. It was definitely over 20, like local news outlets and then the national. Wow. And so I think Fox News captured on it because it was that traditional story of like a conservative state and like liberal kids or whatever, however they spun it.
Crazy kids.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it was a short interview. Unfortunately, I feel like he, you know, interrupted me a lot. Kind of like
never imagine that happening.
Yeah. Yeah. But I went into it expecting the worst Like, I thought he was going to call me names or say very bad things about me, and he didn't. And so I left, like, happy because I had set my expectations so low, you know?
So I don't think that people have an appreciation for what it's like to be interviewed like that. So it's literally two heads in one head in each box. And to people who watch television, I'm guessing that they have no idea that you're actually staring into a camera, right? Yeah, so
yeah, that's correct.
Isn't that kind of weird to be, like, so you're hearing somebody in your ear, and then you're also looking into the camera and talking to the other person.
Yeah, and there was a green screen behind us.
Oh, right. So yeah, it's very produced and very, very professional.
Prepped. I wasn't prepped. Oh. I didn't know what questions were coming. I was interviewed, like, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and then it aired that night.
Wow,
yeah,
that is fast turnaround time.
And you were really young too.
Yeah,
so
I was
did
21.
You,
oh, wow.
Did you have like a professor or your parents or like people, how, so you just got thrown in. You're like, here we go.
Yeah, I really was just thrown in. My advisor actually was like, I don't know if you should do this. But for me, it was so important to get our story out there. And people forget Fox News, unfortunately, is the most watched news channel in America.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, number one, most viewers. That's why we have some of the problems we have today. So I went on that channel to get our story out. And it actually helped us at the end of the day because of how many people watch the show. And so we were able to fundraise all of the money that we lost back in 36 hours.
Wow, 36 hours?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Wait a minute, lost?
Well, they got defunded by the state.
Oh.
And then she was able to refund it in 36 hours. That's amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of support for what you were doing.
Yeah, right.
So many questions. So you're 21. Your parents aren't. What do your parents think about what you're doing? Like, how? So, like, obviously you're in Tennessee, so like maybe more conservative.
My parents aren't like right wing fanatics, but they are just kind of like Southern. Typical people. Like, I don't think they thought I was going to be this like sex ed spokesperson. But at the end of the day, they supported me because I was their daughter. And I think they just had to like grow up really quickly on this topic, like overnight when it got all the news attention.
Do you believe that there is such a creature as bad PR?
I actually don't, in my opinion, especially with what I'm doing. Like, I honestly, like, I would not mind if a news outlet made fun of what we were doing or something like that, because at the end of the day, at least someone heard about what we're doing, and maybe some of them will be curious and check us out, and we provide a really excellent experience. So if they actually checked it out for themselves, we would be fine.
I spend a lot of time in the blockchain space, which is also very taboo and people are very fun about it, and we also have like a very icky past that, you know, is very controversial. And so when most people think about Bitcoin or blockchain, they think of, you know, some evil guy wearing a black hoodie doing black hat money laundering and hacking and that
sort of
sex trafficking
in a bad, very bad way,
drugs,
or selling
smuggling
drugs, drugs.
How would you turn, maybe give me advice from your perspective, how would you take what you've learned so far in a very controversial space and apply it to, like, how would I make, because we still have bad PR today, I go through bad PR today, you know, individually also, what should I do? What should I be thinking?
Yeah, I don't know if my same framework works for you all, because I feel like your product is fairly complex to the average consumer, so I could see how bad PR would actually be harmful for you all. Where I feel like bad PR for me is probably just like, oh my God, sex, you know, and like people have been doing that for decades. So I feel like messaging for you all is actually crucial to get ahead of that and tell your own story first and don't let someone else write the narrative or be alarmist.
So how would you take a media person making fun of sex or saying like, ew, sex, this is so bad. What is your response in those sorts of situations? Like, why is that a good thing for you in the world of sex?
I think it would depend on what exactly the media person was saying or if I was in a live conversation with them or whatnot. But the reason I say all of this is because I know some female founders that run sex toy companies, like very progressive vibrator companies that are built by women for women, and they have gotten some of their best conversion and sales from extremely conservative news articles because I think those are the consumers they really need to reach in many ways. And so I just think it's ironic
repress consumers, basically.
And so sex education is also needed for the repressed Puritan state we're in right now, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know if you've read, like, have you ever looked at Pornhub's annual insight report?
They have an annual insight report?
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's very well done. They do a really good job with data analytics. It's always interesting for me to see that the viewership is much higher in red states.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, more people watch significantly. Yeah. And you can see even state by state, like the search terms.
Interesting.
It's very fascinating. Yeah, you should check it out.
That's fascinating. So, like, a repressed Puritan state of affairs is actually not good for humanity because people will find a way, always.
Oh, yeah. It's not like those people are just, like, I don't know, behaving better than the rest of us or something. They're just having unhealthy behavior.
I just have a hard time believing that PR, any PR, good, bad, indifferent. I mean, I don't think that PR, net-net, I don't think there's such a thing as bad PR. You know, to put that in quotation marks. Because at the end of the day, my whole thing is, my soapbox is being memorable. You know as well as I do, is being memorable, you know? And so, to that degree, there's something to be said for negative articles that make people remember you.
Yeah, exactly. That's all. I think that's the most important thing for consumers is, because they get inbounds from so many different, they can spend their money and watch their, and with their eyeballs, they can spend it in so many different ways. So I think I read you have to market something 7 times, usually, before someone will buy. Yeah.
Yep. So then can I ask some personal questions?
Sure. Yeah.
So, like, you're a sex educator, you're an expert, you've done the counseling thing, you ran a nonprofit, you've been on 100 podcasts already. So, how happy are you in your sex life? So, like, tell me about Brianna's life outside of Founder CEO.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, early on, I feel like I definitely struggled because of my lack of sex ed and how taboo it was to talk about it. And I really didn't know how to speak up for myself and what I wanted in bed. I think, unfortunately, also a lot of young women don't understand very basic things about their body, like how do women have an orgasm? What is the clitoris? Like, these basic things, unfortunately, I didn't learn till college. Which is ridiculous. Like, why do we teach the penis and not the clitoris? It's ridiculous. So anyway, I really struggled early on, but now that I've worked in the industry for 7 years, I really have no problem saying exactly what I want and what I need, because all of this comes down to communication, right? So being able to tell your partner what makes you feel good in bed explicitly, giving them direction like, hey, slow down, hey, move to the right. I think a lot of women struggle with that, especially like in a one-night stand dynamic, because they don't want to hurt the guy's feelings or some stuff like that. That's so ridiculous, right? Like, you're just like being a vessel for him. I get really upset when we look at the orgasm gap. Have you heard about the orgasm
gap? There's an orgasm gap?
Yeah, so very similar to the pay gap. So. You know, the idea that women make less on the dollar than men, same thing for orgasm. So most men, if you ask them, did you orgasm the last time you have sex, like over 95% of them say yes. Unfortunately for women, that answer is only around 60% saying yes.
Really?
And I think this gap, you know, is important to address too, just like the pay gap.
Yuri actually doesn't have that problem in our marriage.
Oh, amazing. Good.
That's why I'm like, what, really?
Yeah.
I've been spoiled.
Yeah.
Awkward. Sorry, I'm being really hot and red.
Let's have a moment of silence on that note.
Yeah. Hey, Ari's giggling right here and turning red. Okay. Married partner.
What city state are you living in?
I live in San Francisco now. Oh, okay. I have a partner named Carly. I identify as bisexual, so I've dated men and women in my life.
Ooh, what's the difference?
What's the difference?
Yeah. Is there a difference?
I'm attracted to men and women still today. I find that my relationships with women are often healthier. The way I think about it is there's misogyny in all parts of our lives. in private and public spheres, and why not try to eliminate as much misogyny as I can in my personal life. Women have misogyny too, though, so of course you can't eliminate it at all, but I do prefer probably being in a relationship with women. But sexually, everyone's fun.
How do you define misogyny?
I guess at the end of the day, just men prioritizing themselves over everyone else, or believing that men and women are not equal.
I was gonna describe it simply as just hatred of women.
Yeah, that's a good, that's a simple way
hatred
too.
Hatred of women.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think sometimes men can be misogynistic without being conscious of it, unfortunately, just because of our society. I don't even know if it's always like malicious. Sometimes it's just cluelessness, which we maybe shouldn't forgive either, but but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Once you become aware that what you've been saying and doing for the last several years in your life is actually racist and is actually misogynistic, it hurts, I think. I think the person who realizes that, I think, is like, oh, you know, I think it causes like a personal crisis with them.
Am I bad?
Yeah. 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 So back on that note about sex education back when you were growing up in school. So this is kind of funny, but when I was growing up in middle school in North Carolina, also a very conservative state, so my PE class is where they taught sex ed.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
really?
We had a mixed PE class, girls and boys.
Ooh.
And I remember distinctly the teacher getting up and saying, yeah, so like, we're not going to teach sex ed in here because we have boys and girls in here. And so, to this very day, I don't know what sex is because of that. Because I wasn't educated.
That's hilarious.
I was denied the education of sex education, you know? Yeah. So anyway. But then I was given the free sex education of basically the public bus system.
Yeah.
You learned it on the bus.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I learned it on the school bus, yeah.
So how does someone explain it to you? Like, you're like, what, 12, and someone says, hey, I'm going to teach you about sex, banana, into a
No. I'm saying through observation.
Observation?
Listen to me before you react.
Okay.
Basically, kids just acting out on each other and, verbalizing, the most crass stuff that you could possibly imagine, jokes, all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's basically how I eventually kind of extrapolated, mm-hmm. to my, meager level of understanding right now.
Yeah, I also learned about it initially that way and via songs, because I would be like, what does that mean in the song? Because it sounded really innocent, and then my friend would be like, oh my God, that song's about sex, Brianna, and then it would explain it to me,
Really? I grew up under a rock in a lot of ways. You guys will be able to piece it together. Yeah, so sex ed in grade school was just, textbooks. And mm-hmm. you'd be like, uh-huh.
Do you remember if it was a mixed class? Boys and girls?
It was always a mixed class.
Really? Okay, so that's a North Carolina thing then, at the time when I grew up.
Upstate New York. When they taught us condoms in high school, and they separated us. Some boys went to a different class, girls went to a different class, and she pulled out the banana and showed us the condom, and I was like, I don't understand why this is really relevant at all. Totally flew mm-hmm. over. It was after college I discovered that high school kids were having sex. I didn't even know this was a possibility.
Yeah.
So like,
you and I are gonna have some conversations here as the first one, the lentil, gets turns 4 years old soon, and then you and I are gonna have to figure out what our overarching strategy is gonna be for sensitive, mm-hmm. Quote unquote sensitive topics. Well, we should teach them.
So far, he did ask me, how did a baby get into your tummy? And I said, oh, daddy gave me a seed.
Daddy gave me a seed, for a 3-year-old.
And then mommy makes the baby.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, but he hasn't asked, how did the seed get in there?
Yeah. That's cute.
We both sang a song together at the same time, and then it was in there, in your stomach.
Daddy gives mommy the seat.
I guess we'll go ahead and start to close it out here. So on the topic of being memorable, as we head into the latter part of 2019, mm-hmm. we're about to finish a decade here, going to the 20s. Mm-hmm. So as we go into the 20s, what's your top idea that you would want to have people remember you by?
I hope that everyone can realize that sex isn't a scary thing to talk about and to speak up for what you need. And if you're a woman especially, like, explore on your own and then feel confident communicating that. I think it's so important for people to just embrace this topic and let go of the shame, and we can be closer in our relationships together then.
Yeah, shame is a hidden, extremely corrosive mm-hmm. emotion. That's Brené Brown's book. Mm-hmm. You know, so what was the name of that book? But anyway, yeah. Have you heard of Brené Brown?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've seen her Netflix special.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think her book on mm-hmm. her book on shame and all that, I thought it was amazing. Yeah, it's on vulnerability. Yeah. It's about the guy in the arena.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the book right now.
Brain fart.
Holy cow. It could be something that could really tear people down, and especially me and you being Asian American.
Yeah.
I think shame in Asian American culture is unfortunately extremely pervasive. Guilt and shame is like very rampant.
Very.
And so, you know, hopefully maybe you and I can try to lessen that, at least in our own little world of, you know, our four-person family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Or have you ever heard that before, that, like, culturally speaking, shame is very leveraged in Asian cultures more than others, or is it just universal?
Well, I think everyone struggles with shame, but I have heard that it can... I studied abroad in Japan briefly, and I did learn about this idea, and I can't say it in Japanese, but there's this saying that in society, like, if you are the nail sticking out of the board, like, the Japanese society will, like, hammer you down because they don't want anyone, like, sticking out. They want this unity in their society, where I feel like in Western societies, it's more focused on individualism versus community.
Yeah.
And there are cons of and pros of both approaches. But, yeah, I do think that there is a lot of shame in those countries too.
So I think it was maybe Twitter I saw in the trending section or something like that. Apparently there is an alarmingly high rate of sales in adult size sex dolls mm-hmm. in Japan right now.
Yes, the erotic industry in Japan is booming. It really is. Unfortunately, sometimes for bad reasons. There are also a lot of amazing, like, manga and anime sex positive comics mm-hmm. coming out of Japan that I really respect and love. And I would love to localize our bot for Japanese and Korean at some point.
Hey,
I heard
Korean
that,
too.
Well, for a while there on Elon Musk's Twitter profile, he was really into anime. So he tapped into, like, a little subculture of Twitter where, you know, the people who love anime all of a sudden are big fans of Elon Musk.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that we went off the gold standard in the United States in 1971?
No, I did not.
Elon Musk was also born in 1971.
Oh. I see what you're doing.
That is not a coincidence.
Yeah. Conspiracy theory over here.
Conspiracy theory, exactly.
Sigh.
Ari always, like, you know, sighs when I make that joke.
Yeah.
But I love it. Thank you so much for the time. Anything else, Ari?
Yeah, so if people want to learn more, follow you, what should they do? So how do they get in contact with you? Yeah.
Yeah, so go to juiceboxit.com, just juiceboxit.com, or you can follow us on Instagram at juiceboxapp, and then you can check out our bot. Just put your phone number in our website.
Awesome.
No Twitter profile? No Twitter
We're on Twitter too at JuiceBoxIt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I'm the Gen Xer who is crazy about Twitter now.
Nice. Yeah.
You know, whenever I think about JuiceBox now, I think of that movie, The Girl Next Door, and is it worth the squeeze?
Oh,
so
nice.
That's what I think
of. Is the juice worth the squeeze?
Is the juice worth the squeeze?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's worth it. Yeah.
Oh, man. I almost forgot about this last one. So, Mean Girls, the movie.
Mm.
Lindsay Lohan,
mm-hmm.
who has her own sort of interesting, you know, colorful past history.
Mm-hmm.
Mean Girls, I always, whenever Ari and I have, like, kind of, like, you know, societal, cultural kind of,
mm-hmm.
like, conversations, I actually reference Mean Girls a lot because I thought that movie compacted, like, you know, less than 2 hours. A lot of the social kind of, you know, like you said, like women have misogyny
mm-hmm.
as well. And I like to say that it's, you know, that's a girl area. That's a girl world thing. That's a girl world thing.
Unfortunately. Yeah. I watched it for the first time. What was it? When I was pregnant recently.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So
grew up under
her
a rock.
Living under a rock. Yeah. I mean, do you have comments about that? Like, it's a girl world thing. Like,
is there a girl world thing?
I don't like that messaging, because let's think about why that is. And it's because of the pressure that we're put on by men and the patriarchy in our society that forces women to compete in that way. And belittle each other in that way. It's not just like women being mean on their own. We need to think about the context of like why they're like that. This is what you're referring to, like women bullying each other.
I don't understand it. Right. I say that because like I'm not a woman. Yeah. And I don't understand it.
Right. Unfortunately, I think, you know, we as women need to understand we need to lift each other up. We're not competing against each other. We're competing against like the larger system here. But you know, that takes a lot of education to understand that. So I'm not really into blaming like the individual. I'm more into blaming like the cultural and the system that we live in.
Yeah. Got it. Okay. Final wrap up.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time, Brianna. I really love your outfit. I've been like looking at the pattern. She's wearing like a flowery green and blue and yellow sports suit.
Suit with
brown elbow pads, mm-hmm. and it's very visually appealing and fun, because like, you know, you can tell like she's not, I don't know, what's the right word?
She's being intentional.
You're interesting.
About it. She's
interesting.
Being intentional about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and very memorable. So thank you so much for your time, and then to our listeners, I hope this is very interesting to you, just because it's different than our normal everyday conversations, but I thought there's a real opportunity for us to help normalize it with our own listeners too and our own communities. And I think the more we do that, the more we communicate proactively, the better we'll be as humanity. I mean, we're stuck behind our screens, our phones, in our individual cars, and so let's share more often. We have all the technologies to do it, and this is a very important part of our lives, whether or not we're publicly talking about it. And I thought Juicebox had a really, really important story, and thank you so much for sharing. And then rate, review, subscribe, and share if you love this podcast, and together we rise.
Bye, y'all.
Thanks so much.
Hello, this is Mark Jung Chun from Federal Way via Manila, Philippines. None of the statements or opinions expressed in this podcast by the guests or its hosts is to be taken as financial or legal or psychological or dietary advice, or a solicitation of any kind to participate in a conservative or risky or speculative financial instrument that may or may not require accredited investor status as defined by either the Security and Exchange Commission or the Commodity Futures Trading Commission of the United States of America, or independent thought and rational thinking from the laws of humanity. By listening, you acknowledge that the hosts, Ari and Day, and their guests are not financial advisors or legal scholars or psychologists or dietitians of any kind, but only humans and not sentient intergalactic alien life forms. There shall be no reliance by the listeners to the representations made in this podcast as being factual, fiduciary, or any other big vocabulary word you can think of. All statements made in this podcast by any living or dead or unborn or zombie or robotic entity in the past, present, or future of the space-time continuum of the known universe are purely ironic and coincidental thoughts and opinions. Moments of sarcasm, sadness, education, glee, entertainment, or any other emotion found in this podcast are fully your responsibility and reaction that may or may not be intended for the listener in any way, shape, or form. This podcast contains adult information. Discretion is strongly advised. Thank you for listening.
All right. Hello. Yeah. So we're live right now, and I'm going to let Ari do a little bit of an introduction since you've seen her, mm-hmm. And then we'll just keep going from there. No, I'm going to hold it. You missed the first part where I said, I'm going to hold it and move it around.
Got it.
To optimize for sonic quality.
Pronounce your name. Brianna Radar?
Brianna.
Brianna?
Yeah.
Brianna.
Anna?
Brianna.
Brianna.
Yeah.
Brianna.
Okay. And so, go ahead. I'm gonna hold it.